I love originality so much, I keep copying it.
This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, March 2nd, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Manifesto You. In the February 2009 issue of Poetry Magazine, there are 8 manifestos by contemporary poets. And recently, at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, some of those poets read, or rather yelled, their manifestos to a live audience.
The poet is a liar. The poet is a liar. The poet's tired.
That was Charles Bernstein. We're going to sample more from his manifesto and from the others at the event, which was celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Futurist Manifesto by the Italian poet F.T. Marinetti. Here to help us understand the why and wherefore of this very strange literary genre is Marianne Cause, author of Manifestos, A Century of Isms. She also wrote an introduction to the manifestos in Poetry Magazine. Welcome to Poetry Off the Shelf, Marianne.
Thank you. Hello, Curtis.
So let me play just a bit of a Charles Bernstein reading Marinetti's historic manifesto, which was published on February 20th, 1909. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready for this.
So here we go. Hang on.
It is from Italy that we are flinging this to the world, our manifesto of burning and overwhelming violence with which today we establish futurism. For we intend to free this nation from its fetid cancer of professors, archaeologists, tour guides, and antiquarians. For much too long, Italy has been a flea market. We intend to liberate it from the countless museums that have covered it like so many cemeteries.
So, no small irony that he's reading that in the Museum of Modern Art.
I think that's very funny, too. I think we all thought it was funny and ironic and still sort of moving at the same time.
But that's the thing that puzzles me about manifestos. I never know whether I found this funny, but I don't know whether the author, Marinetti, found it funny when he was writing it. I get the grim feeling he was rather earnest about it.
Oh, why you have a grim feeling? I think he definitely was earnest about it.
Oh, my God.
It's just all these years later, you know, it seems both earnest and delightfully true. I mean, it's time for everybody to take on this energizing mode. All the words he chooses are so strong.
Speed and things like that.
Speed, yeah, the whole speed of it. I mean, I'm thinking of slow food and all that, all the things that we do as being so very opposite to the energetic speed he had.
Right.
And I think that manifesto is certainly one of the best I've ever read. I love the way it's set, you know, under the great domes and up all night. And then the way that it was distributed, you know, pamphlets dropped over Milan and a big poster in the street saying futurism in red, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It has a certain irony to it now, recreating it. But the way Charles read it was not ironic. It was just the way it should be, I think.
Now, literary manifestos seem to take a page from political manifestos, do they not?
Manifesto of Communism.
Yeah.
But somehow they're more, to me, they're a lot more challenging and a lot more complex. They don't just say one thing. Of course, they always say down with something and up with something else.
Right, down with you, down with you, and
up with
me.
Down with you and up with us, sure.
Yeah. But where does the urge to write a literary manifesto come from? Why bother?
Oh, because we want to make proclamations about why people should read our work, right?
We would call it marketing today in a fancy.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very good marketing.
Now, what did you make of Charles Bernstein's manifesto, which is a mixture of seriousness and really kind of wonderful.
It's funny.
It's funny. It's the whole atmosphere is one of hijinks and comedy.
And I think that's the only kind of manifesto that would work now.
Let's hear a little bit from it.
No parodist goes unpunished, because in these times the parodist is pilloried for the views he or she parodies. In a world of moral discourse, absent ethical engagement, only the self-righteous go unrebuked. This is so and so is this, but neither is important. That is theirs and near's not here, but neither is important. Never twill, never twine, nor peep, nor bleat, nor pipe. Neither's important. Carpe diem. Carp and die.
So, you know, that's the way it is. It's funny, and it's somehow very inspiring to more energetic things that we could do in our writing and our art, it seems to me.
He's playful. He stuck in a little nonsense rhyme in the middle. Also, he stuck in a full joke in the middle of his manifesto. So it's a kitchen sink genre.
Yes, and the interruption, of course.
Imagine myself as just the person I almost am.
Oh, excuse me.
I think I have to take this. Hello? I'm in the middle of something right now. Yeah. No. I'm busy. Can I call you back? It'll be four or five minutes. I tell you what. I want you to hold the price on the Boccioni. I don't want to go up on that. But the Carrara, let's you know, see where it goes. But I think we can go up 2,000 or 3,000 on it. I really want that, okay? I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Okay, bye-bye. Sorry about that.
That was delightful. And, of course, it's a setup job. Like manifestos are always setup jobs. I mean, I do not believe that Marinetti and his friends sat up all night and do it all, you know, and I don't think they were necessarily under great domes. But that's the point, isn't it? It's a construction of the energetic impulse, seems to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, A.E. Stallings read a very witty manifesto defending rhyme. Now, would you call this a reactionary manifesto?
I don't like the word. I mean, I know it's in reaction to other manifestos, but the word reactionary sounds so awfully super conservative.
Right.
And I think that manifestos are precisely about excess and not about conservatism in any form.
Right. Let's hear just a little bit from that.
There are no tired rhymes. There are no forbidden rhymes. Rhymes are not predictable unless lines are. Death and breath, womb and tomb, love and of, moon, June, spoon, all still have great poems ahead of them.
Why would somebody... I know she's doing this as a bit of a joke, and because Poetry Magazine asked her to write a manifesto.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
They call it commissioned manifesto.
It doesn't seem right, does it, to commission a manifesto?
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
That's the great irony of the whole thing. I mean, can you commission somebody's excitement? Please be excited for the next 10 minutes. So
it should just well up, right, out of somebody's...
It should be automatic, like surrealism and Dada.
Yeah, well, she had fun with it anyway.
Well, that's the issue. And I think that, you know, Dada is fun and surrealism became a little earnest, but it's a lot of fun for us who are still dwelling in it all the time.
Now, Thomas Sayers Ellis also performed at MoMA, and he wrote a manifesto in Poetry Magazine called The New Performaform. Let me play just a little bit of that one.
Performaforms do not lie on the page or on the stage, frozen in little boxes or voices, unable to interact with the reader or listener, as if on a table in a morgue.
He's a wonderful performer. I think his point was basically that there's poetry is made to be physically performed in front of an audience.
That's right. So it fits in with that whole performance. You know, now it's like installation art. Performance art is the really big thing, has been for a long time. And that's what Charles, of course, does so well, and also Ellis. I mean, the performing of what you've written turns it into something that is truly important. You cannot perform in a monotone, you know. I mean, you can, and that would be its own interest. But I think to call something performer form is really nice, and then perform it that well.
Marian, what's the future of the manifesto? Are we so trapped in irony that we can never earnestly issue a manifesto?
You know, I keep saying this is another manifesto moment, and I guess I really believe that. But I do think it's a moment in which the collective is progressively stronger. I mean, the ego has thankfully somewhat diminished as we look, as our bank accounts diminish,
yeah.
So does the ego. I think that's pretty good for a time of collective reappropriation of energetic things. Yes, I think it's a manifesto moment, and not just because we're all celebrating the manifesto everywhere this year because of Marinetti, you know, the centenary and all that. I think it's a very good moment to make manifest our caring about things, yeah.
Marianne Koss, thanks so much.
Thank you, Curtis.
Marianne Koss is a distinguished professor of English, French, and comparative literature at the City University of New York. You can read her essay on manifestos and a bunch of contemporary manifestos on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Let us know what you think of this program, where our motto is...
Existence needs essence the way a walking tour needs local color.
Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks so much for listening.